House Finance come to order. I'd like to, we have Representative Merrick, Representative Josephson, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative LeBon, Representative Carpenter, Representative Vice Chair Johnston, and I'm Representative Wilson. We have a quorum to do business. Thank you so much. And Representative Ortiz. And today we are going to have a presentation on our contracts. And with us we have Kate Sheehan, Director of Personnel and Labor Relations with the Department of Administration. If you come forward, put yourself on the record and help walk us through contracts. And we have also Co-Chair Foster. Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kate Sheehan, and I'm Director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations. Today's presentation is going to go through a couple of different items. I'm first going to talk about monetary terms that we do with our collective bargaining agreements. That's going to include the cost of living adjustment and the merit and pay increments. And we're going to talk about some bargaining 101, kind of the laws that get us to what we do and the rules when it gets to you guys. And then finally, I'm going to wrap up with the current contracts pending before you all.
And can you tell us what's automatic, you know, with the steps and what parts you actually have that you can negotiate? And we're curious, obviously, before you even start.
Sure.
Representative Johnston?
And could you also, is there a chance, if not today, give us an idea of what's in statute and what's in federal law?
Yes, I can get through all that today, no problem. So maybe I'll start with this slide and kind of go back, because this, I think, will get to your question, Chair, Madam Chair. So we negotiate cost of living adjustments. Those are what we call COLAs. That's what you see before you right now for the Alaska State Employees Association. You saw a COLA of a 3% July 1st of 2019, which is the first year of agreement, 1% the second year of agreement, 1% the third and final year of the agreement. So the COLAs are one thing we negotiate. We also negotiate merit increases and pay increments. So merit increases are most employees. The three Marine unions do not have merit increases or pay increments. And then our teachers' associations, they have slightly different, more of a teacher salary schedule. But all of our other state employees have merit increases and pay increments. So merit increases are steps A through F. And they're approximately 3.5% increase between each step. You get them every year with an acceptable or higher evaluation, but they are automatic. If we're going to take away a merit increase because of poor performance with a low acceptable or unacceptable evaluation, that needs to be given timely, or it's automatically given if it's a late evaluation.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell us what the percentage is on a normal merit increase?
Yes, through the Chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard. They're approximately 3.5%, so they're going to vary by bargaining unit. Some go as low as 3.2%. Some go as high as 4%. It's just the way years ago that the salary schedules were set up. But the average is 3.5% for merit. So once you hit F step as the final step, or it's G step as the final step for the general government union, then you move into what we call pay increments. And pay increments were bargained back in 2008, 2009. They were also put into statute. And those are every 2 years, and those are 3.25%. And for those, you do have to have a performance evaluation. You cannot receive one until you have a performance evaluation that rates you mid-acceptable or higher. So low acceptable or unacceptable, you can't get one. They are every 2 years. And there's no cap on them. The PSEA, that's the Public Safety Employees Association, their contract does have a cap on pay increments. And the supervisory union, they don't have a cap, but they're spread out further than just 2 years. At one point, they move in the steps, they move to every 3 years. So those are slightly different. But everybody else, it's 3.25% every 2 years.
Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The performance rating of acceptable or better is required in order to earn the increase, and that's a correct statement on my part?
Through the Chair, Representative LeBon, yes.
So my question is, and I'm thinking back to my days in the private sector, We realized in evaluating performance reviews that we had 90% of the workforce that was performing above average. What percentage of our workforce at the state level falls into the acceptable or better category? Is it a traditional looking curve, or do we have, are we employing a whole bunch of superior folks that are getting the maximum increase?
Through the chair, Representative Laban, I would say it's similar to your experience in the private sector. I would say the majority of our employees, and I don't have a percentage, but the majority of our employees do attain mid-acceptable or higher.
Representative Johnston.
Shoot, I got so caught up in Lake Wobegon that I just forgot my question. I guess we're going to have to come back to me. I just went out the window.
So with the merit increase, so if we see a contract that says 000, which we've seen before, does that mean they truly get 0% on each portion of it, or is it really a 3.5% every year, just nothing added to it?
Madam Chair, it's a 3.5% every year, just nothing added to it. So when you see all zeros, so zero colas, we're not asking for any additional funding to the contract, but the merit increases and pay increments remain. Those aren't part of the funding.
So with corrections having a cost of living at 4% this year, actually they're going to receive 7.5% up to F, and then in G, it'd be every other year they would get 3.25 added to that 4.
Madam Chair, that's correct. Well, yes, the 4% is applied, and then you'll get whatever you're due, either a merit increase or a pay increment. And then the following year, if there's another cost of living adjustment, which there is for the correctional officers, they would receive that on top of whatever merit increase or pay increment they're due.
So why is the cost of living adjustment the actual cost of living, whether you're using Anchorage CPI or, so why is, I guess, when did that become negotiated, and why would we go away from that?
Madam Chair, I don't know when it started being negotiated, but since I've been around since 2004, we have not tied the cost of living adjustments to the CPI. Sometimes they've been over, sometimes they've been under, or there haven't been one at all. But since I've been around, we have not tied it to the CPI.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just from my own experience in this particular area, I think it's only been in recent years with the low rate of inflation increase that the increases have sometimes been greater than the cost of living increases. But there are many more years where the cost of living, the COLA increases were shorter than the inflation rate. So there's that.
I guess I just always thought cost of living adjustment meant cost of living adjustment.
Yeah.
Didn't realize it was negotiated, but I understand what you're saying. It could have been a 1% where actually the cost of living may have been 2% or 3%. It would be interesting if you went back to see what that looked like. Thank you. Representative Carpenter, followed by Representative Johnston.
She was first. Do you remember your question?
Yeah, we might want to go to her first so she didn't forget it. Representative Johnston. Johnston.
Thank you. Senioritis. What were the, it was supervisory unions and the public employee union that did have caps?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, the public safety employees, they do have a cap. The supervisory union, they spread out the years in between. So you would not, the theory is an average state employee who does their 30 years would not get as high as a pay increment because the years are spread out in between as somebody who still is in the, every other year.
Okay, and just a follow-up to the COLA. And with the COLA, it's not region specific, right? So across the board, all correction officers would have the same COLA no matter if you're in Juneau or up in the Matsu Valley.
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, that's correct. The COLAs are across the board for everybody in the bargaining unit.
Just, I find that quite interesting because it really isn't a cost of living adjustment. Thank you.
But then you have the geo difference. That's where it comes in. Like if you're out in, I think it's Bethel and some others,
yeah,
where it's like a 60%, I think it's like 5% in, 3 or 5% here in Juneau, so that geo difference would be on top of the cost of living adjustment that would be then on top of the salary increase.
Madam Chair, you're correct. So Juneau has a 5%, Bethel is a 50%. So depending on where you live, you may have an additional geographic differential, and that's what is to care for the higher cost of living in some communities.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Okay. I was boggled on the fact that a cost of living adjustment is not a cost of living adjustment.
Well, that's where I was.
We just label it whatever we want to call it. It's a raise, so we'll just call it something that sounds better. So the cost of living adjustment, I heard it's negotiated. Does that mean that it's just a number that we sit and negotiate, or is there some process or factors or criteria that we use to determine what that should be?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I think that answer, it would depend on the contract and what's been going on. Do we have recruitment and retention difficulties? For instance, one of my last slides, I showed the four pending. There is some trooper cost of living adjustment pending before you all for 7.5%. That was taken into account to try to catch up the troopers to what Anchorage Police Department was paying. So we also try to engage in pattern bargaining. So maybe if we're bargaining a 1-1-1 with another union, we might do a 1-1-1 with someone else. So certainly we also look at what the prior contract. Do they have very high COLAs given that year? We also look at, for those unions who go to interest arbitration, where the COLAs are awarded by an arbitrator. If they're high, maybe the next year we're not going to go as high. So there's various factors that play into it.
Okay. So our cost of living adjustments functionally, when we're talking about negotiations, has nothing to do with cost of living. It has everything to do with a negotiation process of what it's going to take to keep those employees around.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, yes, and I have a slide coming up that will show you what we've bargained in comparison to the Anchorage CPI, and that'll kind of show you how close we've gotten.
Okay. Look forward to it.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. In the late 1970s, the inflation rate was 14% and notoriously high, and it affected borrowing, et cetera. Surely in that circumstance, and I know that's before your time, but surely in that circumstance, a bargaining unit's argument for a cost of living adjustment would be vastly stronger. I mean, you just said effectively in response to Mr. Representative Carpenter that there's no correlation at all. Is that what you meant to say?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes and no. I mean, obviously we take many things into account. We would take inflation into account. Of course, the state's financial situation is always taken into account. So, yes, there's various things. Unions are, you know, as with any negotiations, an employer and its employees, you're going to start off vastly different and then meet in the middle, which both sides think is fair to their members and that the state thinks is in the best interest of the state, looking at all kinds of factors.
Thank you.
Let me continue.
Okay. I'm going to go back to the first slide. This is just kind of setting you up for what our bargaining units are. What we're doing right now is we're currently negotiating with the top groups. Four of these are pending in front of you. Well, one, two, three, yes. Four of them are currently pending in front of you. So the Alaska Correctional Officers Association, of course, they're made up of our correctional officers, and we just finished binding interest arbitration with them, and so that contract has been submitted. That contract expired June 30th of 2018.
So since it expired in 2018 and with a 4% increase, does that then retroact back to when the contract should have been in place?
Madam Chair, the way that the arbitrator awarded it was he awarded a 0% effective July 1st, 2019, so there would be no retroactive. July 1st, 2018. The 4.5% is effective July 1st, 2019, which is actually the second year of the contract. So there's no retroactivity.
Richard Johnston.
Yes, thank you to the chair. Are we allowed to talk about any of these while you're in current negotiations?
That one's done.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, Madam Through the chair, Representative Johnston, we, the power of negotiations is with the executive branch, and then the legislative branch has the power of appropriation. So the executive branch doesn't talk to the legislative branch about the negotiations. Certainly in the past, we've received intent language, mm-hmm. But we keep it separate from the legislative branch until we send it over for approval.
And just follow up. So our currently are all the list here, are you done or are you still in negotiation?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, a little bit of both. So the correctional officers were done. The Alaska State Employees Association, that's our largest union, as you can see, and they're made up of our admin assistants, paralegals, engineers. We are done with them. Their contract doesn't expire till June 30th of this year, but we did reach agreement with them, and that is pending before the legislature. The Vocational Technical Center Teachers Association, we are currently in negotiations with them. We have not reached agreement, so that has not been sent over. Their contract expires June 30th of this year. The Confidential Employees Association, that is, well, mostly my staff. It's HR staff, mostly in the Division of Personnel and a few other places. Their contract also expires June 30th. We did reach agreement with them, so those terms are pending before the legislature right now.
And can you tell us what those are, just so that we can?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, so for the Alaska State Employees Association, that's the 3% COLA in the first year, 1% in the second year, 1% in the third year. For the Confidential Employees Association, there's no COLAs associated with that three-year contract, but they do move to a 40-hour work week up from a 37.5-hour work week. And that is what we did last year that was approved for the supervisory union and our laborers, trades, and crafts. They moved to a 40-hour work week in the last legislative session.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, it sounds like you won the bargaining match there. So with the confidential employees, you got them to accept no COLA and an increased work week.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, but they get paid for the additional 2.5 hours. So, yes, they are working an additional work week. They're getting paid for 40 hours. The next three are the three marine unions, the Inland Boatmen's Union of the Pacific, IBU, that's our unlicensed crew, MEBA, the Marine Engineers Beneficial Association, that's the licensed engineers, and Masters, Mates, and Pilots, MMMP, they're our licensed crew. Those three contracts all expired on June 30th, 2017. We have not reached agreement with them yet. We continue to bargain, and when we reach agreement, those terms will be submitted to the legislature.
Madam Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, when you talked about a binding interest arbitration or binding arbitration altogether, in those circumstances, because I guess statute allows for or insists upon binding arbitration, at that point we have a purely appropriation function, right? We're just done. We're just appropriating, and we must appropriate. Am I right about that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the state, the executive branch, due to binding arbitration, must submit the monetary terms. The legislature does not have to appropriate the funds. If the legislature were not to appropriate the funds, as with any other collective bargaining agreement, we would go back to the negotiating table. Obviously, we couldn't reach voluntary agreement in the first place, which is why we were at interest arbitration. But it has happened in 2009 where an interest arbitration award was sent to the legislature. It was not approved that year. It was approved the following year. We didn't reach a new agreement, so the same terms were pending in front of the legislature.
So follow up.
Follow up.
So the legislature changed its mind and adopted what it formerly did not adopt. Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Could have been a different legislature.
It's a good thing they had a choice.
Yep. You may continue.
So the following that is currently pending is the Teachers Education Association of Mount Edgecombe. That's our teachers at Mount Edgecombe, of course. Their contract expired June 30th, 2017, and we've been negotiating with them the whole time. We did reach agreement, so those terms are pending in front of you. And for them, we did a 3% COLA in the first year, 3% in the second year, and 3% in the third and final year of the contract, with the contract to be effective starting July 1st, 2019.
And do they have the same steps as our other state employees since it's a state school?
Madam Chair, they do not have the same steps. They're set up much like a school district, so their steps are based on years of experience, degrees, sometimes how many continuing education credits they receive. The next contracts up for negotiations in the fall of 2019, so this fall, is the Public Safety Employees Association. So what you have in front of you right now for the Public Safety Employees Association is just for the troopers. It's not for the entire unit. The entire union is made up of not just troopers, but also court service officers, fire marshals, and airport police and fire officers. So we will begin bargaining in the fall with that entire group.
So the 7.5% that was given on top of the contract that they already had, is that 7.5% per year? Was it 7.5% until they get done with this negotiation? And was that 7.5% added to the, I think they had a 4%, I want to say 4 or 5% raise already in the contract?
Madam Chair, they had a 6% raise the first year of their last agreement, and then zero COLAs the remaining years. The 7.5% is a one-time adjustment, it continues obviously because you're building up the salary schedule by 7.5%, but it doesn't continue. I mean, I guess it will continue on because the salary schedule is higher, but it's just for the troopers.
And was the 7.5% ever added to the 6, or was that 6% gone and we were now into the 0%?
Madam Chair, the 6% was gone. We're at the 0% now.
Representative Johnston.
So was this negotiated? Was the contract reopened just for this purpose?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, yes. So there is intent language last year to open up negotiations for the troopers for recruitment and retention. So we opened it up. It's not just the troopers and public safety employees. It's also the command staff and the supervisory union. So the 7.5% applies to trooper recruits, troopers, corporals, sergeants, lieutenants, captains, and majors.
Representative Knopp.
Here. So, apologize, I was a little late and I missed part of the presentation, but you're talking about, wasn't there two rounds of 7.5%? Wasn't that a total of 15% proposed? Where are we at in that process?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, yes, there was, but what happened is some of that 7.5% was through a market-based pay study, a classification study. And so what we did is we looked at that, and not every position went up 7.5%. Every position went up a range, which is approximately 7.5%. It didn't work that way when you went from captain to major. They only received around a 3.5% because their ranges aren't as far apart. So we first, when we learned that we were so, for lack of a better term, out of whack with Anchorage Police Department, we started looking at other police departments, the larger ones in the state of Alaska. We also looked outside in Washington. We were losing a lot of troopers to King County. And so we started looking. We decided through classification that we were not at market, so we raised it a range. That classification action is separate from the negotiations. And then we did go back and negotiate a 7.5% on top of the range increase that they received.
And how much was that study? I mean, sure it cost something.
Madam Chair, we did that in-house in our classification within the Division of Personnel.
And was that required before you could give a raise? Is that something that's required through the contract or through statute?
Madam Chair, statute requires like pay for like work, so we do internal alignment, but we also look at market-based pay. And so, yes, in order to do a range change like that, we would need some sort of study.
Okay. Thank you.
The last grouping there, the fall of 2020, we will begin negotiations with our supervisory union and our labors, trades, and crafts. So supervisory is, of course, all our supervisors. Labors, trades, and crafts is our general maintenance, our equipment operators, electricians, food services. And as I mentioned earlier, those two groups were pending in front of the legislature last year, and they both went to a 40-hour work week, so they also did not have any cost of living adjustments tied to their contract. And then the last group is the non-covered employees, exempt, partially exempt, and excluded. And of course, any statute, any salary change is in statute for them as part of the state pay plan. I'll pass this slide since I already talked about it.
Representative Josephson.
This may sound sophomoric, but I'm curious through the chair. It's always struck me as odd that, for example, a deputy commissioner can make $200,000 and his or her boss has a statutory fix, something like $150,000. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. So the deputy commissioner is a partially exempt. So yes, they are subject to the state pay plan. You'll see a lot of them making higher salaries because they are longer term state employees. Commissioners are exempt. Their salary is actually set by the State Officers Compensation Commission.
Follow up. You said that a deputy commissioner is a longer-term state employee unless they're not, right?
Through the chair, yes.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair, it's always struck me that a place to cut is in some of the highest exempt salaries. I don't know. We should have a conversation about that at some time.
That's why we're starting here. Thank you, Representative Josephson.
All right, so I talked about that there are other monetary terms that we find in the contracts. These are just some general ones. I won't go through every one. For the Marine unions, I'm sure you've heard about the cost of living differential. That's set in statute that we bargain a cost of living differential, and that's not that's Alaska versus out of state. That doesn't look at communities within Alaska. It looks at what the cost of living is in Alaska versus Seattle, Washington, to be specific. Most contracts, well, all contracts have some sort of leave provisions, as you can see, that we bargain. There's different incentive pays when you get to, for instance, the correctional officers, the public safety employees. They have like pilot premium pay, a diver pay. Many unions also have the geographic differential, which we talked about earlier, and those rates were based on a 2008 study by the McDowell Group. Travel and per diem. Most of the travel and per diem that is bargained now just ties it to the Alaska Administrative Manual.
We have a question from Representative Johnston.
Yes, as far as the correctional officer and the education incentive pay, do we have any sidebar as far as the education, or is it just general education?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, it is for a bachelor's degree or higher, but it doesn't have to be in a specific field.
And is that so they can get a raise somewhere? I mean, like for teachers, just, you know, so they could do better in the area they're at. So for a corrections officer to get a bachelor's degree, is that then required to be, I don't know what, after correction officer where you would move up to, but is that the parameters, or I could just get a bachelor's degree in engineering or something else that is not even relevant to where my job is?
Madam Chair, it's just an increased percentage of pay. It's not tied to a specific position. It's a part of a recruitment tool.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick question with regarding per diem. What's the average per diem pay for most of these positions?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, the admin manual dictates the per diem, and it's $60 per day unless you're just doing a day trip, and then it's $45 per day.
Through the chair, just if I might, just a couple of random things that have come to my mind regarding salary and benefits. I met one employee when I first arrived who said it was her job to travel around the state for about half of every week, and I think she was doing Medicaid compliance or something like this. She described that until she arrived, for example, in Bethel from Anchorage, she wasn't on the clock and received no pay. Is that possible?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, travel time is not compensable time. If it was before her scheduled work hours, so if she left, say she left Anchorage at 7 a.m., mm-hmm. her schedule started at 8. From 7 to 8, she would not receive pay, but starting at 8, she would. If she traveled at night coming home and didn't get home till 9 at night, any time, say she stopped at work at 4:30 was her hours. Now, if she's overtime eligible, some of this is slightly different based on working, but you don't. We don't compensate for your travel time unless it's during your work hours. Again, there are some different rules depending on if you're overtime eligible or not.
Okay, I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Most of these are self-explanatory. What is family night pay and extracurricular pay for the EDGECOM teachers?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter. Family night, because it's a boarding school, one day a week they request that teachers and their families eat dinner with the students, and they have a family night dinner. They do receive some additional pay for that. Mm-hmm. And then extracurricular pay could be if you're coaching one of the teams, if you're in charge of the debate club, if you're taking on additional duties.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is the cost of living differential different than the COLA? Or are they the same, or what is it?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, they are different. So the cost of living differential is just for the Marine unions, and that's in statute that will have a cost of living differential between Alaska and Seattle. And so that's separate from the COLAs.
Follow-up?
And that is in statute, is that what I heard?
Through the chair, yes, it is.
Maybe you could provide that statute number to the chair for me.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you. Very good. You may continue.
As I mentioned, this is a sample historical COLA and Anchorage CPI comparison. So we have it going back to 2001. We actually have a spreadsheet going back to the 80s on this. But you can see then what we've either bargained or that's been awarded through interest arbitration and what the CPI is and where we've come. And as we talked about earlier, sometimes we are below CPI, sometimes we are above it. This next slide just is from fiscal year 18, but it gives you the actual yearly average pay. These are of filled positions. We took it from actual salaries. It does include all pay, so it would be overtime, premium pay, shift differential, and it also includes the geographic differential. So this just gives you an idea of what the average salary is in these bargaining unions.
And is it true the only way to change the geographic differential is through statute?
Madam Chair, yes, it's in statute, the geographic differential. It's also bargained. And so last time back in 2007 or 8, we had an appropriation, and we commissioned a geographic differential study. And then the legislature took that information, put it into statute, and then we bargained it. With
it
the
takes units. That study, my understanding, it takes that study to make that change.
Through the chair, we could bargain a different rate, but we wouldn't have any different figures to base on what the differences in the communities are without a study or information.
Well, I guess my question is, could we just say we don't want to do that at the same rate and change it just because maybe we don't have the funds to do it at the same level we do? You're saying we wouldn't necessarily have to have the study to do that? You just wouldn't know how to set those without study?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Interesting. I had a different conversation back then, so thank you.
This slide 8 talks about our health insurance benefit. I want to point out that this is just for Alaska Care members. So we have 11 unions. 4 of them have their own health trusts, and I can talk to you about those. But this is just the rate for Alaska Care members. And so you can see starting back in fiscal year 2017, we went up to $1,555. That's what we're still currently at. We've held steady at $1,555 for a few years, and I think at this point it's looking that it'll stay that way for maybe another year or two.
Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you to the chair. Do you have any, it looked like we were starting to get a handle on these in 2014, 15, and 16. Do you know what happened in 2017?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I do not know, but and I don't do retirement and benefits in my shop, but I do know from speaking with them that they've been working hard at plan management to have it remain steady, so but I don't know what happened.
Thank you. And there's more interest in the healthcare portion of that, we can have them come before us as well. Representative Ortiz, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So would these dollar figures be state's contribution to the individual employees the state's monthly contribution to their health care benefit, is that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, this is the employer contribution. Just recently, we started negotiating an employee contribution for the economy plan that historically had not been done, but that's been a recent, probably the last 3 or 4 years that we've been negotiating, but this is what the employer contributes per eligible employee per month.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, if this were a table showing average salaries since 2006, It might be 25 or 30% higher rather than double or 50% higher?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, if you looked at the cost of living adjustments and the merit steps in the pay increment, yes, the percentage would be very high on an employee.
Follow up? But it wouldn't be, for example, you show in the largest union, ASEA average salary is 61,000. If we looked at the FY06 average salary, would it be 31,000?
Through the chair, Representative Justice said, no, I don't believe so, but I don't know what it would be.
I mean, Madam Chair, I think this illustrates that a lot of the increase in budgeting is health care. And that's not really the fault of the employee. That's just the system.
I think that's something we need to look into. We've kind of had similar discussions. I've had concerns that we pay out to health trust instead of making them part of our system, whether or not it's holding our system and making it more expensive, but that's probably a different presenter that we probably need to have that discussion with. Representative Johnston.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm just going to say that there have been some great efforts on this. Department of Administration has been making some great strides, and so I think it would be a good idea to have them come up. I just was concerned with 2017. I'm not quite sure where that came from.
The leaders will be taking notes to say we need a different presentation on our healthcare system. Thank you. You may continue.
Thank you.
Representative LeBron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry for interrupting. This is an insurance benefit credit, and that dollar amount is an average per annual credit that's provided to the employee for their health insurance. Is that an accurate statement?
Through the chair, Representative LeBron, health insurance is not my specialty, but what this is what the employer pays to insure an employee under the economy health care plan.
So follow up. So my question is, how much does the employee contribute toward that benefit, if any?
Through the chair, Representative LeBron, it depends on the bargaining unit. Some employees are contributing this year up to 12%. Other employees are contributing a flat dollar amount. And some employees are not contributing anything right now. Like I mentioned, we started probably 3 to 4 years ago, started bargaining an employee contribution for the economy plan only. If you have the other plan, the premium plan, you've always had an employee contribution. It's just the economy that was historically no employee contribution. So we're kind of all over the board right now as we work through the negotiations process. But our goal is to get everybody to be paying up to 12% or up to 15%.
May continue.
All right, thank you. And it's not on this slide, but I did want to mention the health trust. So we have four: the Labor's Trades and Crafts, the Public Safety Employees Association, the Masters Mates and Pilots, and the Alaska State Employees Association. And I apologize, I didn't put this in a slide, but I did want you to know the current rates we're paying for them. For the Alaska State Employees Association, we're currently paying $1,432. For Labor's Trades and Crafts, we're currently paying $1,503. For Public Safety Employees, we are paying $1,555. And for Masters, Mates, and Pilots, we're paying $1,346. They're much lower than the others because we have gone without a contract, so we've been paying status quo and haven't increased that. I'm calling it Bargaining 101, but it just kind of gives you an idea of the statutes that pertain to what we do and kind of the process. So negotiations are mandated by the Public Employment Relations Act, called PARA, and that's found in Alaska Statute 2340. We begin negotiations usually sometime in the fall. Each collective bargaining agreement has an article that explains when they can ask for negotiations, but of course we could start earlier if we wanted. And statute does say that agreements cannot be over 3 years in duration. They can be less, but they can't be over 3 years. PARA also requires that we bargain wages, hours, and terms and conditions of employment. Those are mandatory subjects of bargaining. The state may, but is not required to negotiate permissive subjects of bargaining. One of the biggest permissive ones is classification. As I mentioned earlier, there is classification in statute that requires like pay for like work. So the state through its classification system, decides what the appropriate pay is for a position and what the duties of that position are, and that is not bargained. Monetary terms of the agreements must be submitted to the legislature no later than the 60th day of the session to receive consideration. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't consider the contracts after the 60th day, and in many years they have been considered, but there's no requirement to consider them after the 60th day. If negotiations don't lead to an agreement, we generally go to mediation for Class 1 employees, which I'll talk about in just a second here. We are required to go to mediation, but for most we go to mediation. If that fails, then once the contract is expired, employees do have the right to strike. Employees who are on strike, they don't get paid, but they may not be terminated if they're on a lawful strike. So not every employee can strike. We have three classes of employees, and again, this is in statute, and our Class 1 employees are a public service, so it's your troopers, your correctional officers. We have nurses who are Class 1 employees. Okay. Class 2 employees can go on strike, but only for a minimum amount of time. The state can seek an injunction and call them back to work. Those main employees are going to be the vessel employees for the Marine Highways. They are Class 2 employees. And then your Class 3 employees is everybody else, and those folks can go on strike.
Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you. Is there possible that we could get a list through the chair of the different, how many classification of employees for different bargaining units?
Through the chair, so I understand the different job classes we have in each bargaining unit? Yes.
That'd be great, thanks.
You may continue.
Thank you. And I have a slide in a little bit that gives you some information on the strike. The last bullet point is striking employees may be replaced under certain circumstances. There's a lot of laws surrounding striking employees and what type of strike it is. And so I didn't go into it in the slide, but obviously if more information is wanted, I can get back to the. So, as I mentioned, we have to submit monetary terms to the legislature by the 60th day or within 10 days after reaching agreement. They are subject to funding by legislative appropriation. If the legislature fails to fund the monetary terms, the next steps are going to vary by bargaining unit and may be affected whether a tentative agreement was reached with sufficient time. Again, that depends on if we reach the 60th day or not. Of course, they're also subject to ratification by the membership, the terms of the agreement. And as the last bullet point notes, if the union fails to ratify and the funding has already put into the contract, already been approved, then the funding is reduced proportionately. We operate under status quo, go back to negotiations. I can tell you for the contracts pending in front of you, they have all ratified.
And you said you sent it to the legislature after 10 days, and how do you do that?
So if we reach agreement outside of the 60th day, we then have 10 days to submit it to the legislature.
So what does that mean? I mean, do you send it to Juno? Do you send it through our email? Because I don't ever remember receiving anything, so I'm probably not looking in the right place.
Madam Chair, what we do is we submit a monetary terms report to the Senate President and the Speaker of the House.
I did not know that. Yeah, is there a reason why? I can see everybody's face are like, so why would you just not like send it to all of us?
Madam Chair, I do not know why, but I can look into that.
I'd appreciate that because I honestly did not know that information went there, but I've never been the Speaker of the House or the Senate President. Maybe that's why. Representative Johnston.
Yes, through the chair, I'm quite curious. Why would it maybe not go to LBNA? Because it's if it's not during legislative session.
I think Ms. Sheehan's going to find that out for us because we are obviously very curious on this incident.
And Madam Chair, we of course submit it to OMB. Where they're sending it, I'm not sure either. I can find that out.
Not us. So you may continue. But we'll also ask our speaker for the information.
As I mentioned, these are the three strike classes. I went over this. If there's no questions on it, I'll move to the next.
Just quickly, so the corrections that went to mediation or the I guess the reason, and I'm not trying to pick on corrections, it just has to be the most recent one. Is the reason that they went to mediation because they really can't strike? Or do you just get to a certain point and anybody can go through mediation? And I know once they do mediation, we're not really stuck, as Representative Josephson said, because we could still appropriate the money or not, but I do know it ties the hands. When does somebody go to mediation and when does others, you've been doing for a year or 2 years on some of these contracts?
Right. So, Madam Chair, for any strike class one group, the correction officers, PSEA, mediation is required, and then they're allowed to go to interest arbitration because they can't go on strike. For our class threes, twos and threes, we generally go to mediation because sometimes it takes an outside party to get one, side to shift a little bit.
Thank you.
Slide 12 just goes into a little bit more detail, just for if you were curious about where the strike classes fall. As I just mentioned, the PSEAs are all strike class one. Most of the larger unions, the general government union, the supervisory union, they're a mix, but most of them are class three. But some unions do have a mix of class ones, twos, and threes. So if terms are not ratified or they are not approved and funded by the legislature, most of the agreements require that we re-enter negotiations. They're all slightly different, but most require that we re-enter. It looks a little bit confusing, but it's supposed to be kind of a roadmap to kind of talk about what I just mentioned. The only thing I really didn't get into is the top greens you can see is just we negotiate, we reach voluntary agreement, we submit the monetary terms, they're funded. You can see the arrow going down. If they're not funded, then we return to negotiations. Where it gets a little bit trickier is if we're in negotiations, we reach impasse. Impasse is a term of art. It basically means neither side feels like they can move anymore. They're set where they're set. If that's the case for class ones, we go to interest arbitration. For all others, once the contracts expire, which is June 30th most of the time, the employees can either go on strike or the employer could lock them out. That's one option. You could continue status quo with the contract and continue to try to work through it. Or the state could implement its last best offer.
Have we ever locked anybody out?
Madam Chair, not to my knowledge.
I'd ask. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry if I missed this interpretation. Is there a difference between what you call interest arbitration and what I know as binding arbitration?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, no, I don't believe so. Binding interest arbitration.
Good question. Thank you.
The last slide is just kind of a summary of the ones that are pending in front of you right now. So as I mentioned, the Alaska State Employees Association, they received a three-year contract, 3 years of COLA, 3% in the first year, 1% in the second, 1% in the third. We did have health trust contributions, and in the first year of the agreement, the amount is $1,530. The last 2 years, it's $1,555. And we do, the state does have access to their trust documents, and we have an actuary that reviews them, and that's how we come up with what we believe is the appropriate rate to neither overfund or underfund the trust. And then in this particular contract, we were able to secure some work rules regarding management rights.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you to the chair. As far as the health trust, do you have access to review their financials?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston. Yes, we have language in the contracts, excuse me, where they do have to provide us information every year.
Follow up? That's kind of a leading, but is it, do you have full access, is it a limited amount of information?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I do not know that it is full access. It is the information that our actuaries have determined is necessary to make a decision. I think some trusts, we do have more access to information than others. For instance, Masters, Mates, and Pilots is a multi-employer trust, and there's some concern over providing all the information.
Follow up, So with I mean, I would think fund balances would be of interest. And would that be something that your actuaries would be allowed to have?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, yes, we have access to that information.
Okay, great, thanks.
So do we ever do a comparison between what Alaska Care does and any of these health trusts? Because I know some that are in the health trust, and actually their insurance is better than ours. And it sounds like we're not paying any more, so maybe we'd be better to join theirs.
Madam Chair, I don't know what Comparisons Retirement and Benefits does, but I can find that out for you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay.
All right, the next group is the correctional officers. And again, theirs was an interest arbitration decision, 0% in the first year, which would have been July 1st, 2018. So 4.5% July 1st, 2019, and 3%. And they, as part of the arbitration decision, are now required to pay an employee contribution to health care, and they received, they have to pay up to 12%. Next is the confidential employees. As I mentioned earlier, we didn't give any COLAs, but they did move to a 40-hour work week. And they also, they voluntarily agreed to employee contributions of up to 12%, and then up to 15% in the last year of the contract. Troopers, and we've talked about them. That's a 7.5% cost of living adjustment just for troopers, but in the command staff and the troopers themselves. And then the Teachers Education Association of Mount Edgecombe, they received a 3 years, 3% COLA each year. We did add in some new columns for years of service and continuing education credits that just kind of gave them a couple more columns. And that's all. The final slides are just informational about each bargaining unit, the members, the age, average age, that sort of thing.
Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you, through the chair.
I'm just curious, sorry.
So we are finishing up the last of the first budget process, and we had the personal costs first separate from the budgets, and then some of our departments, we put them in as we were doing it in subcommittees. So in approving that, then we have approved these contracts. Would that be accurate?
Through the chair.
Through appropriation.
In the budget bill, there's generally a section that lists every bargaining unit that is subject to some terms for you to approve. I don't have enough knowledge to speak to where the personal services lines were to answer that question.
Well, if I concur with my operating chair, I believe it was $58 million that was added to this budget based on that list of, well, it's not just the list, it would be the list of those that have already been negotiated. All of them, I don't think, are completely done, but is that correct? Accurate, it was $58 million, so yes, there was an additional amount that went in beyond the salary increases you were talking about that were going in each agency.
So just to follow up, so by approving that, then is that is how we as the legislature involved in this process is through appropriation is how I understand it.
Well, since I had an amendment to take them out and I got a lot of visitors, I'm pretty sure that was exactly correct.
They were follow up?
We're not going to take care of their contracts.
Follow up. But if we hadn't approved it, you mentioned there were some steps that would then need to be taken. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, yes, we would go back, in most cases, re-enter negotiations.
Thank you.
And if we understand correctly from what you said before, you might negotiate, but you could actually end up coming back the following year and still not getting any further on the negotiations, and they would be before us again to see whether or not we had changed the people here or changed our minds.
Madam Chair, that could happen, or, you know, if we understood there was an issue, hopefully there would be movement on both sides and we could come up with something that would pass.
Any other questions? Seeing none, tomorrow, Friday, April 12th at 1:30, we have SB 25, Extend the Board of Dental Examiners, in which we will have public testimony, as well as HB 22, Extend Suicide Prevention Council. We will also take public comment on that. And with that, It is 3:25, and we're adjourned.